Anita, take a seat. Well, you're the first of the congregation to be brave enough to do the Sunday conversation. How are you feeling?
I've been feeling fantastic all day. I've been excited.
That's an encouragement to others when we ask you whether you're going to go for this. Look at Anita. She's as calm as they come and still smiling. Anita, I want to take you back to 1955, to Lambeth, and you were the second youngest of nine children. Mm. And I think we have a photo of you. There we go. I'm guessing that somebody knitted that little hat for you.
My mum.
You can look at it in front there. Oh. And now, the youngest of nine children, what was family life like back in... I think it was it South Norwood that you're West Norwood. What was life like for you then?
It was very busy in the household, but very enjoyable. My mother raised us on her own.
Okay.
Some of my siblings had moved out, but we had a very easygoing childhood to some extent. Our family is very close.
You said that mum raised you on her own. Where was dad?
My parents divorced in the 60s, and my father left, and my mother, they got divorced. And then my mother took care of us on her own.
Okay. I know that you loved your mum very much. I met your mum once before she died, and she was lovely. But she didn't have an easy upbringing either, did she?
No, she didn't. She was placed in St. Dr. Bernarda's homes from the age of 7 till 13. And she was badly treated in there. She was thrown into carbolic soap bars. She was locked in cupboards, and she didn't receive much love as a child.
One of the interesting things that that we hear a lot about today is how we are shaped by our past. We're shaped by our history. Your mum, when she was looking after you, did you get any sense of that? You know. Damage making her not such a good mum, or making her
the reverse. Okay. Okay. My mother was a very loving mother, and she taught us unconditional love. Okay. By her example.
Right.
We learnt so much from her, but she obviously wasn't, because of the time she was raised, she wasn't as knowledgeable as we were. So we sort of broadened her mind with our the way, you know, we integrated in the family.
You talk about her having unconditional love, and you tell the story, which I wonder if you'd share. You tell the story about your dad and your brother, and the way that they were with your mum and with some of the rest of the family, and how your mum behaved in those situations. Can you tell us a bit?
Well, I wasn't... I didn't see this going on, but my mother did tell me what happened, and my brothers and sisters told me too, that mum would often put herself in the way of blows, that my father would hit my brothers, beat them with a belt, things like that, and a lot of the time she took the blow herself.
Okay.
And she also used to go without food, because my father used to gamble quite a lot and drink a lot, and there was often not enough food to go around, so my mum would go without and give to us children.
And then as the family grew up, it was a similar pattern that came through with one of your brothers as well.
That's right, yes. My he's the second eldest brother. And he used to be quite violent, and he would... my younger brother and myself were very scared of him to a certain extent. We would do whatever he says. If he wanted us to go around the shop, we used to go around. We wouldn't argue. Yeah. But he did once hit my sister really badly.
We've got a photograph of you when you're little there. And you think about the things that we've just been talking about. It's a lot for a little one to cope with. And do you feel that... do you feel kind of growing up with that threat around was something that changed you, altered you? Did you grow into a rebellious teenager? Did you kind of kick out against what was going on?
No, I didn't.
You weren't a rebellious teenager?
No, I was a goodie.
when we were talking, you can see this is the depth and the of Anita's rebellion. Just tell us what we're looking at there, which is so rebellious.
It's the lime green socks.
The lime green socks. They look quite yellow in the picture.
They do.
But they were lime green socks. And that was not...
That wasn't part of my school uniform.
That wasn't part of your
school
uniform.
That wasn't my school uniform either.
But you wore them to school. Mm. Did you get into trouble for that?
Yes. I got told to take them off.
Did you?
I did, but then I put them on when I got round the corner, away from the teacher.
You rebel. It's interesting, isn't it, that both your mum and yourself, I know that Marlene, your sister, is here, who I've met on a number of occasions. You've grown up with a very strong sense of family and that same sense of selflessness and of giving to your family. You've chosen not to inherit the bad qualities of your childhood, but to embrace the good things that you've seen. Was that a conscious decision, or is that just who you are?
It's who I am, really.
Okay.
I would say that. I don't like violence. I'm more the opposite. I prefer love.
You prefer love. That sounds like a good motto. You went through school and you stayed into the upper sixth, and then you went from there to secretarial college.
No, I went to secondary school.
Yeah.
I stayed till the upper sixth form, and then I left and started my first job.
And that was as a PA, a shorthand secretary.
Yeah.
And you got to 90 words a minute. Mm-hmm. Was that typing or shorthand?
That was typing.
That was typing.
80 words a minute, shorthand.
Okay. If anybody knows whether that's good, bad, or indifferent. It's good. Is that good, is it? Okay, yeah. So it's no surprise then that you started work with that, and you kind of wanted to progress on the ladder. Mm-hmm. Your first job, where was your first job?
I worked in the Strand for an engineering company.
Okay.
A friend of mine who was in the same shorthand class, she told me about this position. They wanted two friends. So we both went for the job, and we both got the job. And we were there for some time. It was a very small company.
And then after that, you moved into the delights of Soho, working for an advertising agency.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, I think about advertising agencies around that time. I think about Mad Men, if any of you have seen the television series Mad Men. But you tell me that it wasn't quite like that. But
it was a very enjoyable job. I learned an awful lot. And one of the things that they did do there was they allowed us to have a percentage. I was allowed a percentage of what the advertisers earned. And that was more like an incentive for me to work hard as well. So we got part of the profit.
Yeah.
I can't remember how much it was, but I don't think it was very much.
And while all this was going on, you'd started work, and while all this was going on, in the late 60s, there was a problem at home, wasn't there? What was going on at home?
Well, it basically started when my sister was the age 13. My mother found out that she had two diseased kidneys and was only given 6 months to live. So my mum was going through quite a traumatic time, and it was devastating for the whole family.
Where did you turn for help and support at that time?
Well, the family were very supportive of that, of Mum and had the situation she was in. But my sister's godmother, my late sister, her godmother in America told Mum she was going to send two missionaries over from the Mormon church. So they came over to our house and they were very helpful. They used to take my sister to the church. She was in a wheelchair at this stage, and they used to take us all to church and bring us home again.
For you, you found a place in the Mormon church. Mm. You found somewhere you could go. You were baptized into the Mormon church.
Yeah, that in 1969, I think it was.
That's right, mm. Yeah. What did it give to you?
It was faith. I mean, they believe in the Bible, and they do have a separate book, the Book of Mormon. But they gave us support, they gave us love, and it also gave us faith.
Okay. But then in 1979, Maggie died.
That's right.
And at that time, you lost your faith.
Yeah, my sister had three kidney transplants. The first one lasted 9 months, the second one lasted 6 years, and the third one was one that my mother gave her, donated her kidney. And that one only lasted 2 years.
And so you lost your faith because there was a sense of this doesn't work, or a sense of feeling let down, or a sense of not needing that kind of an experience because life had moved on and the problem wasn't there anymore.
I think also because we moved away, right. It was difficult to get to the church, and it's much easier when you're closer to a church to be able to attend it. But I think we gradually moved away from there and we didn't go to church anymore.
Okay. And did you miss it?
Well, I've always believed. I did miss going to a church, but I didn't know where to go. Most of the churches that I'd been into, I mean, we had Mormons coming around later on, but it just didn't appeal to me anymore.
Okay. Now, while you're in your Soho ad agency, something happened. What happened?
I met my first husband.
Peter.
Mm.
What was he like?
Well, he chased me. Basically, we met in a lift, and he said to me, "Oh, it's times like this you want the lights to go out and the lift to break down." So I just said to him, "You should be so lucky, I should be so desperate." So anyway, and then he carried on. I said, "Look, I'm fed up, not hard up." So anyway.
Actually, you were really playing hard to get, weren't you?
Well, I'd been to the pub.
You'd been to the pub?
Oh, yeah.
So you're a bit emboldened.
I wasn't drunk,
no.
But I was, you know, obviously I thought. So I thought he was joking at first, you know. And so anyway, I went back to work. And then the people, the guy that was the postman in the firm, he rang me up and said, "Someone's interested in me, blah, blah, blah." So I said, "I don't know who that is." And anyway, eventually this guy phoned me up and he said, "I met you in the lift." I said, "Well, I've met several people in the lift. Who are you?" And it was quite funny. Anyway, he asked me out and we went out. We went out for some time.
And going out led to?
We got married.
You got married. So you were married at 21, 22?
21, yeah.
21. And which in those days was the norm.
Mm.
Now people seem to get married a lot later. Mm. But in those days was the norm. And how wonderful was married life?
Not as expected.
Okay.
I found out, because we would go to the pub and he would be talking to other Irish, he was Irish men, and they were collecting money for the cause. And he said that he was involved with the Sinn Féin, the political wing of Sinn Féin. And we also had a police raid.
Police raid on the house?
On the house, on the flat we were in, yeah. And because his brother was a bit stupid, I think. And he said that we had a gun in the house, so they was turning over the the flat. They said they didn't want to deal with me, nothing to do with me. It was him they wanted to talk to. And that's not something I like. No. And he was also involved with some other guys who are like heavy guys, real heavies, and one was banging on the door and everything of a night time. So I didn't feel safe right. in there. But then later on I found out that he was gone all night. And after that, in the morning, about 7, I'd been ringing around the hospitals and things trying to find out if he'd had an accident. And then I found out later on that he'd actually gone with 2 prostitutes.
11 months in to your marriage, your first marriage, by that time you're 22. Mm. How did that make you feel?
Well, it's not how I wanted it to end, but I knew I couldn't carry on like that. That's not the life I wanted to lead. And, you know, things got worse than that. And so I made the decision to separate, and we separated for 2 years. And I went to Canada, and I had a lovely time out there. I thought, I need to move on. When I came back, wanted to have a reconciliation. So we met and we went and talked about it, and he didn't seem to change or anything, or wouldn't change. So another thing, I had to walk all the way home in the dark on my own, and I had to walk him down to the bus stop. So I thought, that's how much he cares for me.
I had to
walk him to the bus stop. Yes, I thought, no.
He may not have been a terrorist in that case, perhaps.
No.
He may not have been. So there you were. The marriage had come to an end. You were still young. You were still, looking for love. And along came Andre.
That's right.
Tell us about Andre.
Well, we met. A friend of mine was a friend that I grew up with, where we were raised in West Norwood. It was her 18th birthday, so I went to the pub and we celebrated her 18th birthday. And he walked in, and apparently when he saw me, he liked me. And there was a little while. I was mostly with my friend Patricia, and then he asked me out, and we were just sort of seeing each other as friends. And I found him very gentle, very loving. And it was a comfort to have someone like that after what I'd been through before. And
so it was 20. You were 25 when you met him.
I think I was 22, 23.
Okay.
And we got married in 1980.
So you were 25 when you got married?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And it was with him that you had Gemma?
Yeah.
And was it a happy marriage?
It was for 13 years, 13, six. We were together for 16 years. So the latter part of it changed.
Okay, so how at the start, how did it feel different to when you were with Peter?
Well, I wouldn't have had a child with him if I didn't feel secure. We had a wonderful time together, and he was very hardworking. He worked for a chauffeur company, but he used to work nights and everything, so that was quite difficult to deal with. But then, what happened after that? He started drinking. I think most of it was to do with his job. He was frustrated in his job. And he started drinking heavily. So relationship obviously got worse. I tried to get him to give up. I tried him said to go to AA. So he wouldn't do anything like that. And gradually the alcohol took over his personality. He became a bit more aggressive. And my mum was living with us at that time. As well, and after
did she give you any helpful motherly advice, as they are prone to do just at the moment?
Well, my mum wasn't an interfering mother.
She wasn't an interfering
mother? No, she wasn't. Okay. And what I found out later was one thing she did do for the first time that she'd never done before was she opened a letter that came through from the mortgage company, Halifax, and she said, "I've done something that I'd never do." She said, "But I'm so worried this letter has come by hand." She said, "And I opened it, and it's talked about repossession of the house." And so what I ended up doing, I was working for solicitors at that time. And fortunately, my solicitor helped me, my boss, because the Halifax wouldn't talk to me at that time. So I couldn't try and sort of say, "Well, can I do something, can I arrange something?" And so then what I had to do was take out a loan. I already had a loan, and they helped me to pay the thing off, but I had to pay that over 10 years.
What was the conversation like with Andre when you showed him the letter?
Whenever anything came, he used to say, "Oh, that's all right, I'll deal with that." You know, so I'd never had any worries about that in the past, so I just sort of took it that he was dealing with it, but obviously things must have got... Mum said to me there was a lot more letters coming, so, you know, it wasn't until that time that I realised that there was some big problem.
And when it came out into the open, how did that change your relationship with him?
Trust goes. And because of his aggression as well, I asked him to leave because I thought it was going to be bad for Gemma. And he did leave. And he tried, you know, he wanted to sort of get back. I said, "Well, unless you're prepared to do something, there's nothing we can do because your personality changed." Mum was worried about him too because his health wasn't too good either as a result of that. He's now got cirrhosis of the liver. Okay. So it did affect him.
Right. So there you are. You've got Gemma, who's only 9 at the time the marriage ends. And how did you feel about the fact that this was marriage number 2 that had finished?
It was very difficult to, you know, to feel again, to a certain extent, a failure. I suppose I wondered. But then when I went to AA meeting, they said to me, "I wasn't the person to put the drink in his hand, and I won't be the one to take it away."
So did you go to the AA meetings with him or on your own?
On my own, because he wouldn't go.
Right. Were there any other partners there who were trying to find help for somebody else, or did you find yourself to be the only one who was doing that?
Well, I didn't actually go to the sessions. I spoke to them, and that's what they basically said. And I tried to encourage him to go. But at that time, you know, he was in denial, really. He said, "Oh, I haven't got a drink problem, this, that, and the other." But, you know, it was obviously did.
So you said just a moment ago that there was a sense of you know, failing again.
Mm.
Thinking about 2 failed marriages, thinking about how you'd heard your dad was, how your brother was, did that put you off men for life?
No. it was quite a while afterwards. I just moved on. Moving forward rather than...
Do you think
back.
It's because you're... I mean, are you an inherently trusting person?
Yes.
Okay.
Too trusting.
So I was going to say, so does that just make you vulnerable to...
Yes.
Okay.
I think that's it. And my sister will probably say, I probably love too much.
Okay.
Which I don't think is a bad thing.
Well, I was just going to say, do you ever wish that... do you ever wish you'd been more cynical or harder? Or do you ever wish that you'd been less loving?
No, because I can't change who I am.
No, although sometimes we wish we could change who we
were. I will say this, the one thing I found out from Mum as well was when my parents split up, Mum said to me that I let go of her hand and and run to a man's hand and called him daddy. So I think I did miss out on the father.
Okay.
And I think that that may have had some influence on my life, because obviously I was looking for that kind of love.
That kind of male input.
Which now I can look back and say, yeah.
Yeah, even if they weren't that good. So then what happens next then, if you've not been put off men for life by what's already happened, what happens next? Who comes along next?
My third husband-to-be. We met. We were going out for drinks at lunchtime. He worked in the same building as I did. We were going out for, meeting each other for a year. I wouldn't say that we was, you know, then all of a sudden he kissed me. So I thought, that's changed things. And quite a
it's
big
not
way.
Not just a bite to eat at lunchtime
anymore.
No.
It shocked me a bit, actually. And I thought, oh. We became a couple. And I learned that, I mean, in hindsight, I should have heeded the warnings I had. Because when he was talking about things, I found out that he was in a relationship with a girl and he was living with her. And I said to him, I've never been in this situation before. I don't want to be in a love triangle. I'm not asking you to give her up, but I'm walking away because this is not what I want. And if you say you love me like you do, you need to make that choice yourself. It's not down to me. So it was like a bank holiday weekend, so it was longer. And so I was at home with Mum, and although I was upset, I thought, you know, he's got to do what's right for him. And so eventually he came back and he said he loved me and he wanted to be with me. So eventually he moved in with me because his girlfriend, you know, his girlfriend said, when she found out, she said, you can still go and go with Anita, but live with me. And I said...
Did she tell you that or did he tell you that?
That's what he said. She told me that,
That's what he said. Yeah, I don't know if that was probably true, actually.
My answer to him was, you know, it's... What you're doing is wrong. Because you can't be with two people at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's if you don't love her that much, then it's better to let her go than it is to pretend. And I said the same, if you love her more than me, or you don't want her to be with me, then let me be free to find someone who does. So.
But this is Chris, and he said, actually, it is you I love.
Mm.
And so in 1998. You marry.
Yeah. And it was, I'll tell you what, even my sister will say, it was a fairy tale wedding. It was, I mean, that's the one thing that I think is nice for my mum, because we went to a beautiful hotel in West Sussex. The bedrooms were £250 a night, and my mum couldn't believe having breakfast, you know, in this hotel. The service we had was beautiful. It must have cost about anything between... I think around about 25, 30 quid. 30,000 pounds, I mean.
Yes.
So, again, it was a lovely experience. And we were so... Everyone that came to the wedding thought we were so much in love, which we were.
And from what we've talked about when we've talked over your story, it does sound like it was a fairy tale marriage. It does sound... tell us some of the things that were great, that were high points for you.
Well, we had a lovely honeymoon in Tobago and Trinidad. We went to St. Lucia. We went on safari to Kenya. We had lovely holidays, no expense spared. It was just amazing.
And how was he with Gemma? Because, you know, he's inherited somebody else's little girl.
I was felt like piggy in the middle sometimes, because my daughter and I are very close. And sometimes he didn't like it. I think he tried to buy her love by buying her her own television and things like this. But, I mean, the other thing is, there's no one like your own dad.
Yeah.
And her dad was still on the scene. Because I never had any custody thing. He was just able to see her when he wanted. And because of his work pattern, he could come any time to pick her up. because I think it's important for the father to see the child. But I don't think he was too happy about that.
But he was happy to have Gemma live with you. He was happy for your mum to live with you. It sounds like quite a saint, really.
Well, exactly. That's what I thought he was. I mean, I never expected it to end the way it did. It was just, I couldn't believe it.
Well, I'm going to stop you there. We're going to have a quick break. You're going to have a chance to refresh yourselves, but we come back to find out the next exciting instalment of Anita's life. Anita, thank you very much. Yeah.